Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
And good morning. Lots of things going on that we'll jump right into. After a great weekend. Yes, it was actually that good. I'll tell you about a little bit more, along with some silly things that I managed to recover from along the way. Man. Unfortunately, here at the outset, we can tell you the Democrats are pushing ahead with their spectacle. It's kind of funny. I can't remember who did this, but I saw a post on social media about the Democrats getting ready for impeachment, and it was a picture of a carnival with a special area for clowns. That's exactly what's going on right now as the House Judiciary Committee holds its impeachment hearing. And I believe this is right now being conducted under the leadership, and I use that word very loosely, of Gerald Nadler.
In the same way members are, the topic of the hearing is the president's misconduct, so none of us should find it surprising that we are hearing testimony that is critical of the president. I do not find that the witness's comments are disorderly. I find they are pertinent to the subject matter of this hearing. The witness would be able to continue, except that his time has expired. Mr. Castor is
Mr.
recognized.
Chairman, it's not...
Gentlemen,
Mr.
Will
Chairman, my point of order is not that his words are disorderly. They are unparliamentary. They violate the rules of the House. He should be taken down. This is not about his conduct. He's talking about the motives and
suspend.
The character of the President
gentlemen
of the United States.
Gentlemen, will suspend. The rules of decorum apply to members of the House, not to witnesses. The gentleman may proceed.
So, I appeal
yeah.
the ruling of the chair.
Thank you, John. Very appropriate. And we just happened to dip in at a time where there's controversy over procedures. And I'm sure there will be many more like this. God help this country. I'm serious. Help this country.
The motion is made to table the appeal of the ruling of the chair. The motion
move the motion to table is made in writing.
All in favor of the motion to table will say aye.
Aye.
No. The motion to table.
She has to put it in writing first, then you can call the vote.
Motion to table is...
At least you're following the rules.
Motion to table is sustained.
You know, I think the Republicans ought to just get up and walk the hell out of there. I'm serious. Seriously, just walk out. We're not going to participate in this sham. This is a sham, through and through. Meanwhile, there's some very important things going on, which we will get to. Monumental. I cannot tell you one of the horrible thoughts that just went through my mind right now. There's a scripture, the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? I'm not going to begin to tell you the evil thought that just went through my mind right now. These people are so absolutely positively contemptible. Every single solitary one of these Democrats. They really are. Apparently what was going to take place, that the Republicans were appealing for a vote to slow this hearing down. But for the Democrats, this is all about racing through and rushing to impeachment. Well, congratulations. And I hope every single solitary last one of you get your rear ends kicked in the election. I really do. And this is not to say that I'm a cheerleader for the Republican Party, because you've heard what I've said about Republicans and the Republican Party as it stands today. But this is really absolutely despicable. But I wanted to start the program on a positive note, and that I will do. I want to very quickly get to a conversation that took place last week, at the end of the week, on CNBC. This is not a discussion you're likely going to hear in very many places of the mainstream media, talking about the economy. We have so much to be thankful for here in the United States of America, so much to be thankful for. But the continuing pursuit of power at all costs continues in Washington, D.C. We can choose to ignore their nonsense. Let's be thankful for what is taking place that is good. Listen to this exchange with Jim Cramer of CNBC.
Looking at the New York Post website for a correction of that story they wrote about on Monday about how December wasn't starting out so good and how wrong you were going to be. It's not forthcoming, I don't think. But you were exactly right about the economic backdrop, and there's good things happening, and it validates some of the moves, right?
Growth with very little inflation. I wish people were making a little more money. Obviously, Joe, we want people to make more money. There's a fellow by the name of Michael Semblis. I don't know if you know him, but he is the chairman of market and investment strategy at JP Morgan. He came up with a list of what the cable companies, cable, CNN, MSN, what do they cover? The number 16th is positive economic news. All the rest of them are negative. So you know what's going on here, Joe. People don't want to say good things. And this is the best number I've ever seen in my life.
I said this earlier, can it last forever, Jim? How can it last forever? Unless it's a participation rate.
It has to go up, Joe, because when we win the trade war, which you know we're going to win now because we have the better numbers, then they're going to have to put jobs here. That's what they're going to have to do. We're not even talking about that yet. In the end, the Chinese are going to have to put jobs here because this thing is, the president can walk away from the table with this number.
You are so anti-normal, knee-jerk thinking of the MSM. So we could actually have more jobs coming back if we win the trade war. No, you won't see that written or said anywhere.
Well, you know, sometimes the truth sets people free.
Yeah, that's a beautiful...
Joe, you and I both know. These are 50 years, okay? Now, I'm 64. I didn't know about things were in 13, when I was 13 and 14, other than the war. But these are, I'm not going to say it. You can't contradict that these are the best numbers of our lives.
Yeah.
You can't. I mean, we had guns and butter when we were doing these things 50 years ago. And that followed with inflation and recession. I don't see inflation. I don't see recession. 50 years ago, that number was a curse. Now it's a blessing. And you know something, Joe? It doesn't matter whether you hate them or like them. These are real numbers. Someone said Janet Yellen numbers. That was funny.
Since 1969, that's literally longer than I've been alive.
Well, I mean, what am I going to do? I'm not from the Navin Johnson School of Economics.
Wow. That was pretty hot, wasn't it? It is pretty amazing what we have to be thankful for. But instead, right now, you have this circus taking place in Washington, D.C. We have these Democrats who are determined to bring down President Donald Trump. And you know as well as I am probably among the biggest critics of the president. Yet at the same time, I can tell you this is a joke. This is completely without constitutional standing. And I will treat it as such. Coming up, we'll talk about a terrorist attack. And yes, I have no doubt that's what it was. And why this is so important and needs to be part of our national discussion now.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Back on the Vince Coakley radio program, and we told you the impeachment hearing is going on now in the House Judiciary Committee under the leadership of Gerald Nadler. Let's listen in just a little bit to the Republican counsel who is providing the response to what the Democrats are attempting to do here.
Or bribery or extortion were most compelling to the American public. Speaker Pelosi said Democrats must strike while the iron is hot on impeaching the president. The entire duration of the impeachment inquiry, from the time Speaker Pelosi announced it on September 24th until today, has been 76 days. As Professor Turley testified last Wednesday, this impeachment would stand out among modern impeachments as the shortest proceeding with the thinnest evidentiary record and the narrowest grounds ever used to impeach a president. The artificial and arbitrary political deadline by which Democrats are determined to finish impeachment by Christmas leads to a rushed process and missed opportunities to obtain relevant information. Democrats avoided the accommodations process required by federal courts in disputes between Congress and the executive.
Steve Castor, who is counsel for House Republicans, who is providing the open argument for Republicans, and perhaps we will listen in a little bit later on to hear what is taking place there. I want to quickly go to a call here. Someone wanting to address this issue of Nancy Pelosi and what the Democrats are up to. Fort Mill, good morning, Tom.
Hey, Laurel and Hardy, good morning to you, Vince.
Exactly.
Yeah. I was listening to Rush the other day and had Pelosi on there, and she was talking about impeachment, but she sounded like she was drunk. I mean, she just went over a bunch of subjects, so I think she should be have a test. A GWI, governing while intoxicated.
Oh, that is really good. GWI, thanks very much for your call there, Tom. You know, I would dare say you might be able to go to the nearest bar and drag, you know, why don't we just go? Why don't we do this evening? Let's find, what do they have, like 200-some Democrats in the House? Let's just do a sweep of the city and find like 200 and some drunks and throw them in the House, and I guarantee you they will do a better job. I'm serious. I'm not exaggerating here. And one of the problems is she's experiencing the drunkenness that is probably the most dangerous of drunkenness. It's called the drunkenness with power. That's what you're dealing with Nancy Pelosi. Let me talk about something very serious. Something serious that happened Friday morning. There was a lockdown. This really also grabbed my attention because I was just in Pensacola. Was it about 2 or 3 weeks ago? Went down there for a day trip and drove by this particular base. It's just weird to think that something happened right there. Now we have what will clearly be identified as a terrorist attack. The gunman, Saudi Air Force aviation student. I don't know whether to laugh or to cry. I really don't. Mohammed Saeed Al-Shamani. As of the reporting that we now have 6 Saudi nationals that have been detained for questioning, 6 of them. And there are reports 3 of them filmed the shooting there as it happened. Matt Gaetz, who is the Republican who represents Pensacola, wasted no time calling this shooting an act of terrorism. President Trump tweeted that King Salman told him the Saudi people are greatly angered by the barbaric actions of the shooter. I'm sure they are. 3 other people shot to death during this incident inside a classroom building on the base. The trainee shot 3 fatally, injured 8, opened fire at the naval base, assailing the United States as a nation of evil before he went on that shooting rampage. Mohammed Saeed Al-Shamrani opened fire inside the classroom. Ultimately, police responded and shot him dead. Suspect, a second lieutenant attending the aviation school at the base. You ever think of that phrase in this situation about history repeating itself? It certainly does rhyme here, doesn't it? Six other Saudi nationals arrested near the base shortly after the attack, while investigators were probing the terror leak. Now, three of the six were seen filming the entire incident as this happened. Three of the six. No officials have yet stated whether any of them were students inside the classroom where this shooting happened. This is absolutely mind-boggling. And Charles is reaching out now to a frequent guest we have on this program to help set the table for what's happened here and provide us some context and understanding. One of my concerns, and I'm just being very blunt about this, we are a country that has great difficulty in concentrating for any extended period of time on things that really matter. We seem to have forgotten about 9/11. We've forgotten about the lessons of 9/11. And I think we've been lulled into a false sense of security in a variety of ways. Joining us now to set the table, because our discussion will certainly carry through the next break, our good friend, UnderstandingTheThreat.com, John Guandolo. Good morning. Welcome back to the broadcast, John.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
We only have about a minute and a half left in this particular segment, and I know you'll hold over into the next segment. In this first minute, can you just sum up what has happened here? Any doubt this is a terror attack?
No doubt it's a terror attack, and it just reaffirms and should be a slap in the face to everybody to remind us that the government of Saudi Arabia is an enemy of the United States.
An enemy of the United States, and we can develop this further. Does this administration understand that?
I don't see any sign of that.
I tend to agree with you on this. We're going to talk more about this and some just really disturbing things as well about what's happening demographically in this country, because I don't think there is a firm grasp of understanding of the two fronts of this. And I just want to remind you, John is going to stay through the break, and we're going to talk extensively about what we know about this particular attack, but also remind you of the grand scheme, the long-term plan. It's called the program. And there are two aspects of this. One of them involves terror attacks. The other, civilization jihad, which is colonization. We're going to talk about both coming up. Back to the Vince Coakley radio program. During the break, some interesting discussion here with Charles and with John. And Charles raised a very good question. Who's paying for all these attorneys for this impeachment process? Can you imagine the bill that's getting racked up? How much money is being made by the multitude of attorneys? Not only working for Congress, representing all of the parties involved, the accusers and the accused. They're having a blast. They really are. They're going to make a fortune out of this. In the meantime, here we have yet another terror attack. Have you heard a lot of discussion, by the way, about this over the weekend at all? Even right now. What is getting wall-to-wall coverage? I'm going to go a little bit further than what John Guandolo has communicated. He said that Saudi Arabia is an enemy of the United States of America. This country, whether they've declared it or not, they have participated in a war against the United States of America. And you have these morons right now who are not going after the Saudis or any others. They're going after the President of the United States. Something wrong with this picture. Would you not agree, John?
Well, I think the entire focus of the United States government is totally off, but you got to remember that what the Democrats are doing is participating in a coup against the President of the United States. At the same time, they're in league with jihadis in the United States. And I just, this is the point of what you and I have been talking about now for years, and it has been building to this point where you literally have Congress unlawfully and unconstitutionally trying to impeach president when there are no charges on the table, working in league with jihadis inside the United States. So it shouldn't surprise us that they're ignoring an attack where military people were killed on a U.S. military base by government officials of Saudi Arabia.
This
military
is...
officer.
Tell us what we know at this point about what happened, this guy's background.
Well, we know he's a Saudi military officer. We know he was a second lieutenant, aviation student.
Saudi military officer?
Yes. Yes, a Saudi Arabian Air Force military officer. And he was armed with a pistol, multiple magazines. We know that he arrived in the United States in August of 2017. We know that the night before the attack, he sat around and watched videos with others, ostensibly probably some of the 10 individuals that are in custody right now. Other Saudi military officers also assigned, at least some of them, the NAS Pensacola. And we know that he killed three people and wounded at least eight others. And we know that, of course, his uncle has publicly said, of course, he's a nice boy, can't imagine what happened. Nobody ever does. Just like we just saw in some of these other recent attacks, family always comes out and says, this is totally shocking to us. But anyway, and we know that he was shot and killed. The military officer, his name was Mohammed Saeed Al-Shamrani. And that's just the beginning, because the point of the article that I published last night about this whole thing is that's what we know about the attack. We know that sheriff's deputies stepped in, killed the attacker after several small gunfights on different levels, according to the sheriff giving his version on the news. And we know that the threat was eliminated. We know that there were six Saudis arrested initially, immediately following this, three of whom were witnessed filming the attack. And now we know that as of yesterday, 10 are in custody. So that's kind of the short overview. This took place, the Naval Air Station Pensacola, which many people are aware is a prime training ground for U.S. naval aviators. These were military classrooms, military students, and that's who the target was.
Do I understand correctly, these are also gun-free zones?
Yep, supposed to be. Mm-hmm.
So many angles of this to explore. Where do we go from here, John? Beyond the crime, beyond the act of terrorism that's been committed here, where do we go to look at the layers of complexity here that go beyond just, because I think that my concern is people are going to look at this, okay, here's another lone wolf who's carried out an act of terrorism, it's over with.
Right. And as a matter of fact, it took until yesterday afternoon, Sunday afternoon, for the FBI to say we are acting under the presumption this is terrorism. But Friday, Saturday, they would not call it terrorism. And this is where we're dealing with. We have the Secretary of Defense publicly said, you know, it's too early to call it terrorism. What did you need to know? What exactly did you know? A Muslim officer in a foreign government, which is a hostile enemy government, although the U.S. government doesn't recognize that because they're witless and clueless, kills members of our military on our military base. I mean, the response is unbelievable. The president tweeted out something over the weekend saying the king of Saudi Arabia is really sends his condolences and he's deeply saddened, as are all the Saudis. No, they're not. I mean, has the president got his head buried in his backside? Saudi Arabia, listen, the whole point of the article I just wrote, let's just review very quickly. 15 of the 19 hijackers on 9/11 were from Saudi Arabia. We have a 2002 CIA memorandum that unequivocally states that the Saudi Arabian embassy in D.C. and their consulate in L.A., that there is, quote, incontrovertible evidence that there is support for these terrorists within the Saudi government. You've got numerous FBI reports. I was an FBI agent. I can tell you, and this has been documented and written up, we went to interview individuals linked to the Saudi embassy regarding 9/11, and we were stonewalled the entire way. You have the Saudi ambassador, Prince Bandar. We know for a fact that money went from him and his wife's personal account to Omar Bayoumi, who was handling two of the 9/11 hijackers in California. We know that, as a matter of fact. We know that Prince Bandar's unlisted number to his chalet in Aspen, Colorado, was found in the phone book of a senior al-Qaeda jihadi, Abu Zubaydah, who was captured in 2002 in Pakistan. I mean, we know these things. We know that three of the 9/11 hijackers used Naval Air Station Pensacola as their address to registered vehicles and other things. We know that, as a matter of fact, we've got two government agents from Saudi Arabia, names of Al-Qud Hayyin and Al-Shalawi, who trained at Al-Qaeda camps in Afghanistan with 9/11 hijackers, worked for the Saudi government.
This is unbelievable. Can you hold for one more segment, John?
Absolutely.
We'll conclude our conversation with John Guandolo. Check out his website, understandingthethreat.com. Stay with us. Saudi Air Force officer, Second Lieutenant Mohammed Saeed Al-Shamrani. This is the guy who carried a pistol, several loaded magazines, opened fire on military students, the Naval Air Station in Pensacola. Three people killed, many others wounded. We've talked about the crime. We've talked about Saudi Arabia. I want to go to where we go from here, John. And I'm almost, I'm trying not to be, pessimistic. It doesn't really begin to get to what I feel here, because we've had this discussion ad nauseum, and I've really seen little to nothing out of the government. And it doesn't matter who's president. First, let's start here. If you had an audience with President Donald Trump right now, what would you say?
Well, I would certainly explain to him the nature of the war is very different than his advisors are telling him. You mentioned it at the onset of the show. The primary way that this enemy intends to win the war is not in the violent realm. The primary way they intend to win the war is by controlling the narrative. And they have controlled this narrative about Saudi Arabia, that they're an ally, to the T. Saudi Arabia is the center of the global jihad. It's the center of Islam. And when he went to visit Saudi Arabia, I would explain to him, which people can read on our site, our entire write-up, that the entire way that meeting with the leaders of the entire Muslim world was understood by Mr. Trump and the U.S. State Department is exactly the opposite of the way the entire Muslim world understood it. Because when they speak, when they communicate, the language they use is based on Islam's understanding of the world and of language. So words like terrorism do not mean what we think it means. To them, terrorism is killing a Muslim without right. So when the Saudi king said, Mr. Trump, we need to eradicate terrorists and terrorism, he was talking about Mr. Trump and the United States. Because in Islam, terrorism is to kill a Muslim for a reason that is outside of the Sharia. That's terrorism. So a terrorist is somebody who kills Muslims for reasons not authorized in Sharia, like U.S. military forces and the U.S. government killing Muslims for reasons other than allowed for by Sharia, like we've done in Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria, etc. Now, we're doing it lawfully, of course, but not according to Islam. And when you understand that they are speaking to us in ways, and the entire Muslim world, everybody that was in that room in Saudi Arabia, every leader of every Muslim country that was there, which I think the only one missing was Iran, they are all party to the Cairo Declaration, which says we, the entire Muslim world, view the rights of other human beings only through the lens of Sharia. And Sharia mandates war against the non-Muslim world until the entire world is subjugated to Islam. That's it. I mean, this is a complete disconnect from reality. So what would I tell the president? I would say, sir, the entire way we're looking at this war is upside down. Since 9/11, the U.S. government has catastrophically failed to identify the enemy and to use the enemy's doctrine, like we are supposed to do, to professionally analyze the threat and then create solutions to win the war. That would be the beginning of the discussion.
Let's get into the practicals here. I'm just going to think out loud here based on my conversations with you and all that I'm familiar with. I think we absolutely need to purge the ranks of the FBI and the CIA of all of the pro-jihadi sympathizers. That has to be a starting place, doesn't it?
Absolutely. But that's the long game. I mean, you're talking about that's real work, and yes, we do. But it has to begin with, right now in the United States, the American government does not have a counterintelligence apparatus. So we are totally blind to this. We're totally exposed. We have no counterintelligence apparatus. We are penetrated at very deep levels. So when you ask the question, let's talk practicality, this is exactly why for years, Understanding the Threat has said, and I have said, that the way to win the war is at the local level. It's the only way to win this war. We cannot count. Yes, we need at some point the federal government to at least block, but we can't count on it. It's at the local levels that we are going to have to take care of this. These jihadis and Marxists that support them are at the local county level all over the United States. I can tell you in Texas, they're in every city council. They have polluted the school boards, the chambers of commerce. They've got the ear of city council members and mayors and sheriffs and police chiefs. And so this understanding of what the threat is upside down, not just at the federal level, but down to the local level. And it certainly isn't in Texas. Texas is not the worst place in the country, although Texas is in pretty bad shape. There are places all over the country, and very few places are immune. And so it's going to require citizens to understand the threat and then force their leaders to deal with the threat at the local level. And our training programs and our consultation and our education has produced law enforcement agencies that are investigating cases, initiating cases, indicting people, convicting people. And that's what you've got to do. Our work at the local level with